ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ Welcome to you all. Welcome to the webcast of our Tuesday evening class, our Vedanta class, our regular Vedanta class. Our text is Advaita Makaranda of Lakshmidhara Kavi, as introduced in the prior class. We said in the prior class, just a very brief introduction, then we have a nice question before we return to the text. In terms of introduction, we said this was an advanced text in that of the main sadhanas, practices in Advaita Vedanta, Shravana, Manana, and Nididhyasana. Shravana, I gave the refined definitions in the last class, so I'm going to use those definitions today. Shravana is a process of removing any doubts or confusion with regard to what the scriptures teach and what the ancient rishis discovered. Manana is a process of removing any doubts or confusion with regard to your true nature. And Nididhyasana is a process of removing habitual wrong notions. Remember the words we used? Little complicated words, I know. But we called them pramana asambhavana. Asambhavana, literally a feeling of not existing. That's what literally it means. But in our context, confusion and erroneous conceptions. About the pramana is the means of knowledge, scriptures. So shravana is for the sake of removing pramana asambhavana, any doubts or confusion with regard to the pramana, the teaching of Vedanta and what the ancient rishis taught. Then manana, rational reflection, we said was for the sake of removing prameya asambhavana. These terms were on the board in the last class. You can return to that video if you need to see those terms again. Prameya asambhavana. Prameya is that which is to be known. Pramana is the means of knowledge, in this case, the teachings of Vedanta. Prameya is that which is to be known, to be understood, to be discovered by means, but through the use of a pramana. So prameya here, that which is to be known, is your true nature. So prameya asambhavana are any doubts or confusion with regard to your true nature, and that prameya asambhavana is removed through manana. And finally, nididhyasana is for the sake of removing habitual wrong thinking. And we discussed nididhyasana at some length in Atma Bodha, so I don't think we need to describe it further here. Now, quite a good question, and we're having a little problem with language right now. The question is, I'm trying to reconcile these technical terms with your description. What technical terms? Paroksha jnana and aparoksha jnana. We already had in a last class sapratibandhika jnana and apratibandhika jnana. We're now up to four different kinds of jnana knowledge. These are technical terms, are also a little bit important. So I'd like to, I chose intentionally not to use those terms in a prior class, hoping I could avoid some confusion, but apparently my strategy wasn't successful. So let me deal with that here today. So, the question was with regard to paroksha And I'll always use Roman letters because many of you won't be able to read the Devanagari. Paroksha Jnana and Aparoksha. Jnana. Okay. So, paroksha jnana we generally define as indirect knowledge. Jnana, of course, is knowledge. It's a synonym of vidya. We make no distinction. Vidya means knowledge. Jnana means knowledge. So here he's making a distinction that I didn't make, a distinction between paroksha jnana, indirect knowledge, and aparoksha jnana, direct knowledge. And to explain these terms briefly, right now you have aparoksha jnana of me. You see me, you hear me. So you have direct knowledge of my presence, at least my presence on the screen you're watching. You have direct knowledge of my presence on whatever screen you're watching. But suppose I describe to you up in the Himalayas, in a place called Gangotri, near where the Ganga, the river Ganges, emerges from the glacier, a little bit higher up. But at the foot of the town of Gangotri, there's this wonderful waterfall, an exquisite waterfall at the foot of the town of Gangotri. It's about 10,000 feet of elevation up in the Himalayas. Assuming you haven't been there, some of you may have been, but if you haven't been there and I describe to you this waterfall at the foot of the town of Gangotri, 10,000 feet up in the Himalayas, you now have paroksha jnana, indirect knowledge of that waterfall. If you go and visit the place, it's not so hard to visit. If you can't visit this time of year, it's all snowed in. But if you wait till May, you can go and visit Gangotri for yourself. And when you see that waterfall for yourself, you will then have a paroksha jnana. So you can very easily appreciate the distinction between indirect knowledge, paroksha jnana, like the waterfall, and aparoksha jnana, direct knowledge, like the knowledge you have seeing me on the screen you're watching. Now, the terms I used last week, and they're big Sanskrit terms, and I'm going to write it out. I have to write correctly. Sa prati bandhika jnana, that's a mouthful, and pratibandhika jnana, I'm just going to skip writing all that out again. We had a long discussion in our previous class about pratibandhas. Pratibandha, we translated as obstacle. And much of our last class was devoted to describing how when the teachings of Vedanta lead you to discover your true nature, that discovery at first is usually impeded by several obstacles. What are those obstacles? We just got done talking about them. The pratibandhas, the obstacles that you struggle with at first, are pramana, asambhavna. All these terms were up on the board last last week. Pramana, asambhavna, removed by shravana. Prameya, asambhavna, removed by manana. And viparita, bhavana, removed by nididhyasana. We've discussed all that in some detail in a prior class. Those are the pratibandhas when the teachings of Vedanta lead you to discover your true nature. The initial discovery comes with, usually with all three of these pratibandhas, all three of these obstacles. The question was how to relate this sapratibandhika jnana and apratibandhika jnana. Means without. So apratibandhika jnana would be knowledge that is not impeded by those three kinds of obstacles. How do we relate these two kinds of knowledge, knowledge which is impeded by obstacles, knowledge which is unimpeded by obstacles, how do we relate that to direct knowledge and indirect knowledge and direct knowledge? And here, let's be very clear. This paroksha jnana, from a Vedantic standpoint, with regard to your true self, it's not jnana at all. Notice the, let me explain. In fact, it's going to take a while to explain this. Let me sit down. And I can return to those terms on the board as needed. Knowledge of yourself. Yourself is consciousness, your existence as a conscious being. Is it even possible to have indirect knowledge with regard to your own self? It's possible to have indirect knowledge of that waterfall in Gangotri because it's 8,000 miles away from here we are in New Jersey. It's 8,000 miles away. How far away is your true self? There's no distance whatsoever. So we've got a little problem here if we want to use the term paroksha jnana, indirect knowledge with regard to self. Yet, indirect knowledge definitely comes. For example, when you read, many years ago, you read in a book, Atma is Sat Chit Ananda. The first time you read it, you understood what it means. Atma is Sat Chit Ananda, and you understood the word Sat Chit and Ananda, Sat existence, Chit consciousness, Ananda, bliss, if you want to use that word. So when you read those three words, you understood the meaning of the words, but you sure didn't understand your true nature. The purpose of those three words was really to reveal your true nature, but you didn't get that. You only got the meaning of the words. In fact, what a good way to distinguish it is, you didn't get atma-jnanam, self-knowledge, at all. What you received was information. What kind of information? Something called atma can be described as sat-chit-ananda. That's information. Something called atma is sat-chit-ananda, is information. That's paroksha-jnana with regard to atma. That paroksha-jnana, information, up on the board it says indirect knowledge, but we could just as well call it information. You have information about the waterfall in Gangotri. You have no experience of it. You have no direct knowledge of it. In the same way, when you first read Atma Satchitananda, you got information about it, paroksha jnana, indirect knowledge. Indirect knowledge is perhaps a term that's too kind. It's not knowledge at all. It's information. So, with that in mind, paroksha jnana is not self-knowledge at all. Aparoksha jnana is self-knowledge. The teachings of Vedanta, I think you've seen that long enough, the teachings of Vedanta are not meant to impart information. A book on history or a book on physics is meant to give you information. The teachings of Vedanta are so unlike those books. A metaphor I like to use is that the teachings of Vedanta are more like a map, a roadmap. Now look at this. On a roadmap, there's a lot of information. But if you study that roadmap and learn all the information on that roadmap, what good is that? The roadmap is meant to lead you on a journey to reach your destination. That's quite a good metaphor for what the teachings of Vedanta are. The map has information, but that's not its purpose. Its purpose is to lead you to your destination. In the same way, in the teachings of Vedanta, there's plenty of information, paroksha jnana, indirect knowledge, but that's not the purpose of those teachings. The purpose of those teachings is to lead you to discover your true nature as Satchidananda, and then, as just to finish this topic, as we said, when you initially get that aparoksha jnana, that direct knowledge, when you first use Vedantic teachings as a roadmap and look within yourself and discover your true nature, at first, that knowledge that you get, it is aparoksha jnana, but at first that knowledge is impeded by obstacles. It is sapratibandhika jnana, knowledge impeded by the three kinds of obstacles we discussed. And the purpose of this text is to remove two of those three kinds of obstacles. The purpose of this text, as we said in the last class, is manana, removing prameya asambhavana, doubts and confusion about your true nature, and nididhyasana, Vedanta contemplation, for the sake of removing habitual wrong thinking. Okay, enough. That's a good question, and quite a, I think, enough of an answer. Now, I think we are finally ready to begin the text. It's been a rather lengthy introduction, but for an advanced text like this, we should expect a fairly elaborate introduction. The first verse is actually a prayer, which you might find interesting. Let's see the verse. Our tradition, of course, is to recite a verse before we study it. In fact, in future classes, we're going to recite this verse at the beginning of each class. That's a tradition. When a text begins with a prayer verse, every class on that text is begun with that verse. Today we'll learn the verse, and in future classes we'll begin just through with the recitation of this verse. You can repeat after me. Kataksha kirana chanta, kataksha kirana chanta, naman mohabdaye namaha, naman mohabdaye namaha, ananta nanda krishnaya, ananta nanda krishnaya, Jagan Mangala Murtaye, Jagan Mangala Murtaye. All right. To get this verse, and perhaps I'll just remind you briefly that words in a verse, which are metrical, these words are almost always not in prose order. If you're writing prose, you write in a very typical order, but when you're writing verses, to have the right number of syllables and long and short syllables in each line, prose word order is almost always disturbed, so we need to put the words back into a proper order, and we'll begin with the end of the second line, namaha. Namaha is a familiar word in Sanskrit, salutations. When you say Om Namah Shivaya, Namaha Shivaya, salutations unto Shiva, Here, namaha, salutations unto the author's Ishta Devata. The author is Lakshmi Dhara, and like most Hindus, he has an Ishta Devata, a deity that he is most emotionally connected to. And in the third line, you can see who his Ishta Devata is, Krishnaya. Namaha, salutations, Krishnaya, unto Lord Krishna. What kind of Krishna? Ananta, Ananda, Krishnaya. Salutations unto Krishna, who is Ananta, Ananda. Beautiful expression. Limitless fullness. Ananta, Ananda. We'll talk more about that word Ananda in the first verse. I want to skip that discussion right now. So, Ananta, Ananda, Krishnaya, unto that Krishna who is limitless fullness, namaha, salutations. Then in the final line, fourth line, Jagat, Jagan, breaking the words apart, Jagat, Mangala, Murtaye. And it connects also to namaha, salutations unto the one, Murtaye, unto Lord Krishna, whose murti, whose form is Mangala, a blessing for Jagat, for the entire world. Salutations unto that limitless fullness, which is Lord Krishna, unto Krishna, whose murti, whose form is Jagat Mangala, a blessing for everyone who lives on this planet. And the most interesting part of the verse is the opening part. Very poetic. This whole verse, of course, is very poetic. He says, namaha, salutations unto Kataksha Kiranachanta Naman Mohabdaye. That's one long compound word. Salutations unto the one who is Achanta Mohabdaye. We have to pick and choose these words. Unto the one who, Achanta can mean drink. Here it means dries up. Salutations unto the one who, Achanta, dries up. Moha, I'll break the words apart for you. Moha abdi. Abdi is a word for ocean or a sea. Moha abdi, the ocean of moha, moha delusion. The ocean of moha means the ocean of samsara, the ocean of worldly suffering. And why is it an ocean of suffering? That means our life, unenlightened life, here is called moha abdi, an ocean of delusion and suffering. The commentator, I mentioned in a prior class that I'll be studying a commentary, wonderful commentary by one Swayam Prakasha is his name. And it's an excellent commentary. And he says, why is it called moha of the ocean of delusion? Why is it such a terrible thing? Many people go to the sea for a holiday. You go and enjoy a nice weekend, nice sandy beaches, a nice sunset, and the soothing sound of the waves. Well, the commentator makes it very clear that this... in this ocean of delusion, every wave represents a wave of suffering. This is how he envisions the ocean, an ocean in which wave after wave after wave is a wave of suffering, followed by another wave of suffering, followed by yet another wave of suffering. You've gone through periods of life where life feels like one wave after another of difficulty, of challenge, of suffering. And more than that, the commentator says that this ocean is filled with sharks. And these sharks are the tendency of your own mind, raga and dvesha, the tendency of your own mind to drag you around, to compel you to chase after what you want, to compel you to run away from what you don't want. So this ocean full of waves of suffering, full of sharks, which are raga dvesha, these compulsions, so not a fun place to be. But here, salutations unto Krishna, who achanta mohabdaye, unto the one who can dry up that ocean of suffering. And he dries up the ocean of suffering, naman, for those who, literally for those who bow to him, for those who surrender to Lord Krishna, for those who seek Krishna's blessings, for those who pray to Sri Krishna, he, achanta, drinks up the ocean of suffering, or he dries out the ocean of suffering. And how does he do that? You know, that sounds like a really big project, to drink up the entire ocean of suffering, to dry out the entire ocean of suffering. But for Sri Krishna, being Ishvara, being God, effortlessly, it says in the first part, kataksha kirana. He does so, and we'll stay with the drying out meaning of achanta. He dries out the ocean of suffering with kirana, like a sun ray, like the sun can dry a puddle of water. So Sri Krishna has kirana, his rays of light. Rays of light which come from his aksha, from his eyes, but kataksha, kata means side. So kataksha, the side glances of his eyes. So out of the, when you look at someone out of the side of your eye, that's called kataksha. So Sri Krishna here is described as having kataksha kirana. These little side glances, a mere side glance from his eyes is sufficient to dry up that terrible ocean of suffering for you when you seek Lord Krishna's blessings. That's the first two lines. Very lovely poetry, very typical kind of poetry. Now, we should ask an important question right now, and that is, I thought we were studying a text on Advaita Vedanta. Here, notice he opens his text by worshiping Lord Krishna, and whenever you're engaged in worship, there is a worshiper and an object of worship. There's Lakshmi Dara and Sri Krishna. That's duality. How can we reconcile this great enlightened being writing this profound text, Advaita Makaranda? Why should he open this text with a prayer that is certainly established in a context of duality? Well, before I get into the real meaning of it, he's following a convention. There are two levels. So the simple level and then a deeper level. The simple level is he's following a convention. All texts of this sort, they're supposed to begin with a prayer. And the prayer is meant to, by opening the text with a prayer, the author prays that the text should successfully get completed. That is, that when the author is composing the text, the author should be able to compose the entire text without impediment. And also that after writing the text should then be passed down from generation to generation and bless future generations of disciples. How many texts have been lost over the passage of time? There's the funny saying is that when a portion of text is missing, they call it aja bakshita, eaten by goats. If some portion of a text is unavailable, the commentator will say, iti aja bakshitaha. This part is apparently eaten by goats. The problem is that all of these texts were written originally on palm leaves and stacks of palm leaves, and apparently goats like to eat palm leaves. So the prayer then has a very practical purpose, a purpose for the completion of the composition of the text, and also a prayer that the text should survive, not be eaten by goats, but should be studied by students like you and me. That is the simple meaning for the prayer, but that doesn't answer this issue about duality. And in order to answer that question, we're going to have to go very deeply into this, into the Advaita Vedanta understanding of non-duality. Let me go back to the board. Because the only way we can understand this properly, how a great teacher of Advaita can open his text with a prayer which is clearly based on Dvaita, duality, how do we reconcile that? The way we reconcile it is by understanding a unique teaching in Advaita Vedanta. I don't think it's found anywhere else. A unique teaching in Advaita Vedanta which looks through the lens of three orders of reality. Three orders of reality. We can call that Satta Traya. Traya, three. Satta here, order of reality. We can also call it level of existence. Satta is an order of reality or a level of existence, and we can speak of it in a threefold way. We can speak, let me build it up. We'll start in the middle. And these are long Sanskrit terms. We might as well get used to them. They're just terms. They're a little bit lengthy. Our longer terms, students who have studied with me before will be familiar with these terms because we use it a lot. Vyavaharika Satta. Satta, an order of reality, a level of reality, which is Vyavaharika, and we'll translate that as empirical. Empirical reality, some authors will call it transactional reality, relational reality. It's a reality in which we're conversing right now. You are there, I am here. I'm talking, you're listening, you're looking, I'm being seen. There is a relationship between us. There is empiricism has to do with what you see, hear, taste, touch, and smell. So this is called empirical reality, the reality that's present right now in our experience. We contrast that with pratibhasika. Pratibhasika satta, which is a projected reality. When you see the rope snake, that's a standard example. The rope snake belongs to the third order of reality, pratibhasika satta. Your dreams belong to the third order of reality. When you dream about an elephant, that dream elephant belongs to the third order of reality, pratibhasika, satta, projected reality. The rope snake, pratibhasika, satta. Notice that the rope snake, the snake is pratibhasika, the rope is vyavaharika. You see the distinction. The rope belongs to vyavaharika satta. The snake belongs to pratibhasika satta, levels of reality. Notice the number one is missing here. So let's turn up there. Up to the highest order of reality is called paramartika. Let me spell it correctly. Yes. Paramartika satta. And they are long words. Paramartika satta is absolute reality. So notice we have these three layers, three levels of reality. So when you wake up from a dream, the dream elephant goes away. When you recognize the rope snake as being a rope, it goes away. So pratibhasika satta is a projected reality that lasts only until you wake up out of the dream or you dispel the ignorance, and then it goes away, and then you are in vyavaharika satta, normal waking reality. But now watch. When you become enlightened, when you gain aparoksha jnana, direct knowledge, then it's the equivalent of waking up out of a dream. When you wake up out of a dream, you recognize that that dream elephant was nothing more than your own consciousness. And when you wake up out of worldly reality, empirical reality, vyavaharika satta, when the teachings of Vedanta dispel ignorance, and you wake up out of this dream of worldly existence, as it's sometimes said, then you recognize that when you wake up out of a dream, you know that everything in your dream is unreal. When you wake up out of this reality, when you get enlightened, you then know that everything you experience in worldly life is unreal. It's just as a dream is unreal with reference to the waker, in the same way the waking world is unreal with regard to absolute reality, the reality of Brahman, the reality because of which everything exists. Now, what's important here is the fact that these three levels of reality must be properly discerned at all times. And proper discernment doesn't always mean that they go away. Yes, the rope snake goes away. The dream elephant goes away. But there are some kinds of pratibhasika satta that don't go away. Like the blue sky. You know air is clear, but in spite of knowing that air has no color, air is colorless, the sky still looks blue. Or, to use my favorite example, of the sunset. Even though you know the sun is stationary in the sky, the earth is a huge globe, and you're tilting over backwards, the horizon is moving up, making it look like the sun is going down, still looks like the sun is going down, like an optical illusion. So the point I'm making is when you are dealing with Vyavahari, when you are at the level of Vyavaharika Satta, you have to discern certain kinds of Pratibhasika Satta which continue to appear in your experience even though they're false. I'll say that again. There are certain kinds of experiences that continue. You know they're false. You know the sky, you know that air is colorless, but you see the blue sky. You know the sun is stationary, but it looks like it's going down. In those cases, you don't expect, when you are enlightened to the fact that air is clear, does the sky suddenly lose its blueness? Of course not. When you understand that the sun is stationary, the horizon is moving up, does that change your experience of the sunset? No, you still see the sun going down. So it's a matter, notice these words. It's not a matter of experience, it's a matter of discernment, of understanding. This is crucial. Okay? So now you understand it at these two levels. If you are enlightened with regard to the the colorlessness of air and the stationary nature of the sun, then you can properly discern the illusions that belong to Pratibhasika Satta. Now let's use this relationship between Vyavaharika Satta and Pratibhasika Satta. Let's use that as a metaphor to understand the relationship between an enlightened person who is established in Paramarthika Satta and Vyavaharika Satta. So watch this. If you are established in Vyavaharika Satta, you still see the blue sky. You still see the sun going down. In the same way, someone who is established in the oneness of Brahman, Advaya, Advaita, non-duality, someone who is established in the oneness of Brahman still experiences duality. Just like you still experience the blue sky, in the same way an enlightened person still experiences duality. But you can experience the blue sky and know air is clear. You can experience the sunset and know the sun is stationary. The enlightened person experiences duality and knows it's unreal. Okay? So this is, we could spend many classes talking about this, but this, I think this is enough for us to answer this question about why does Lakshmidhara open his text with a prayer? So let's see if we can answer that now. So, I guess the first thing we need to do is say, so prayer is duality. Prayer is a relationship with Ishvara. A relationship, let me go back to that slide. A relationship with Ishvara occurs at which level? So a relationship with Ishvara is not at the level of Pratibhasika Satta. Ishvara is not like the dream elephant or the rope snake. Nor is Ishvara at the level of Paramarthika Satta, absolute reality, because at the level of absolute reality, there's no creator and created. There's no sustainer and sustained. There's no worshiper and the one who is worshipped. All those dualities do not exist at that highest level. Therefore, in Advaita Vedanta, Ishvara belongs to Vyavaharika Satta. Vedanta, empirical reality. This is such an important statement. Ishvara belongs to Vyavaharika Satta because at that level of duality, we have a relationship with Ishvara. We are the created, Ishvara is the creator. Ishvara is the one who has blessings to be bestowed. We are those who pray for those blessings. That's all at the level of Dvaita, all at the level of Vyavaharika Satta. Before I pull this together, let me just make a side comment. Some Hindus are highly critical of this position of Advaita Vedanta. Most notably, the big group known as Hare Krishna, the ISKCON people, are highly critical because they say their complaint is, according to Advaita Vedanta, Ishvara, God, is not absolutely real. That's their argument. And of course, from a technical standpoint, that's what we say. We say Ishvara does not belong to Paramarthika Satta. Paramarthika Satta is only Brahman, non-dual Brahman. We have to put Ishvara at the level of Vyavaharika Satta. But then that leaves us open to being disputed by them. You're saying that Ishvara is not absolutely real. Correct. We say Ishvara is not absolutely real. But that's important. And the reason it's important is Ishvara, according to Vedanta, Ishvara is as real as you and me. If Ishvara were more real than you and I, how could we have a relationship with Ishvara? You can only have a relationship with someone who's at the same level of reality as you are. So if you're in a dream, if you're thirsty in a dream, the water in next to your bed, you have a cup of water. The water that's next to your bed won't help you if you're thirsty in a dream. So in order for your dream thirst to be satisfied, you need dream water, water that's at the same level of reality. What happened to the slide? Huh? I don't know why that went away. Anyway, I'll fix that later. I think the slide went away. No harm. Why did it go away? Sorry, I don't want to be distracted. Let me finish this important discussion. Discussion doesn't depend on the slide anyway. We're discussing why does this great teacher of Advaita Vedanta begin with a prayer? So in Advaita Vedanta, Ishvara, thank goodness, is as real as you and I. Ishvara belongs to Vyavaharika Satta. We can have a relationship with Ishvara. You can't have a relationship with non-dual Brahman. You are non-dual Brahman. There's only non-dual Brahman. From that level, there is no relationship whatsoever. The Paramarthika Satta is a non-relational reality. Advaita, non-dual, means non-relational. No Ishvara, no Jiva, no prayer, no bhakti, no relationship. Okay. So, thank goodness that Ishvara is not assigned to that Paramarthika Satta. Otherwise, we couldn't have any relationship with that Ishvara at all. Ishvara, in the view of Advaita Vedanta, is as real as you and I. Further, this Lakshmidhara is a great master of Vedanta. So he's established in the reality of Brahman. Being established in the reality of Brahman, is it difficult for him to come down to this level, as it were, to to say a prayer. Let me make up a story to explain this. Suppose there is a scientist who happens to be a astrophysicist. How's that? Means a great somebody who a scientist who is deeply learned in astronomy and the physics that governs the universe. So this astrophysicist is not going to think that the sun is traveling down through the sky. The astrophysicist knows so clearly that the sun is turning on its axis. Now suppose this astrophysicist is watching, is on holiday, we said holiday at the beach, at the sea, and along with his wife, he's watching the sunset, and she says, "Oh, look, how lovely is the sunset," she says to her husband, who happens to be this astrophysicist. How will he reply? Will this great astrophysicist say, "The sun isn't moving, the sun is stationary, the horizon is moving up"? What will the astrophysicist won't say that. What will he say? "Yes, it is a beautiful sunset." No problem. The astrophysicist knows without doubt that the sun isn't moving down. The astrophysicist knows that the horizon is moving up. No confusion whatsoever. But no difficulty in saying, "What a beautiful sunset." In the same way, our author, Lakshmidhara, established in the non-duality of Brahman, can absolutely say this wonderful prayer at the beginning of our text, no difficulty whatsoever. Okay. Anything more? No, that's good. Now, give me just one try to get the slide back. All right. All right. I'm not able to get the slide back. I will have that fixed prior to our next class. With the next class, we'll then begin the first teaching verse of this text. It begins with that prayer we've just recited. I think we'll just conclude our class a little bit early tonight. This problem will be fixed before the next class, and we'll continue with that next verse at that time. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet. Asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma amritangamaya. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om tat sat.